Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Can none of y'all mirror me back? Yeah, hear me rap. It's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O. Raps grateful dead. Back to take over the globe. Now break bread.
Welcome back to another episode of Miami Nice. It's 11:47 on a Saturday night. Is it 40? Is it 17 or 47? I don't think I ever get the time.
It's 11:47.
47. Okay, good.
I just watched it. Yeah, yeah.
And we have convened again on the rooftop against a purple sky to talk about this movie. And once again, on the rooftop, my partner in podcasting, Blake Howard. How are you, Blake?
Oh, I'm a fiend, Katie. I'm a fiend for this podcast. I'm a fiend for talking about this movie. It is just like a comfort blanket. We just come up to this roof. We absolutely rip into Agent Fujima on the phone. And I'm just excited. I'm excited to be here.
We have a great guest today, a guest who is very near and dear and close to my heart. I first met this guest when I was his teacher at Chapman University.
Wow.
For a class called Practices of Writing About Film. Little did I know he was a film Twitter scamp, a beloved character who has a wonderful appreciation for Al Pacino and the Ronin lifestyle.
Yeah, dude.
And he goes by the handle Responsible Rob. I know him as Robert Franco. Welcome, Rob. Thank you for doing this today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am thrilled to be here on the rooftop.
Yes, it's a good rooftop to be on. And I would love if you could also just, you know, plug the many amazing things that I taught you in that class, including the magic of Keanu Reeves in Speed.
Well, you know, we would have to do a whole new podcast series about what we learned in that class. Let me tell you.
This podcast is a class, Rob.
You're right. But the last day of class, Katie was like, all right, we're getting pizzas, we're getting snacks, and we're going to watch Speed. It was awesome.
I serve the new
generation. She serves
generation.
The people. Yeah.
I do also remember that, like, I think when we first, like, kind of bonded and, like real life and Twitter life met was, like, one day you came up to me and
I told you that Lex G unlocked his account and you could follow.
Yes. I had tweeted something like, I wish I could follow Lex G and you could.
I was like, Katie, he's unlocked. Get in on it.
And you know what? That has brought me so much entertainment and joy.
Can I just tell you, that's one of those things, you know, you talk to certain people, whether you like see, like went throughout your life, you know, when you're in kindergarten, you see like someone has the lunchbox of the show you like, and you come up to them and be like, I'm also a fan. And you know, like the second I say this, I'm in. The second I knew that if I go be like, look, Lex is unlocked, she'd be like, this kid's cool.
This kid's
lifelong
good.
Lifelong friendship unlocked.
Yeah.
Which is sort of how I feel like Miami Vice works in this universe.
Truly.
This is how uncomplicated life is. You know, I think some people really overcomplicate shit. And kindergarten kids, like kids in primary school, that's all it takes. They've got the lunchbox and it's like, hey, we should be friends, huh? Like, yeah. And it is.
And that's why I am a big spokesperson for going baby mode. I think we need to be back to being babies.
Baby mode.
Go baby mode, all Disney, all the time. You haven't lived unless you've had 12 beers and then thrown on Finding Nemo. That's the lifestyle I live by. But we can talk about that for a different podcast.
These are your like life hacks. Like, I feel like you need to write like a lifestyle book because sometimes you.
I probably shouldn't.
No.
I don't.
No. You need to.
The lifestyle is how to be a really deeply upset, not well-adjusted person.
Rob, you've got to write those absolutely sincerely. Try and find the templates, because I feel like everyone has a template these days of like just inspirational life quotes. But it is,
yeah, I gotta be like, I gotta be like an Andrew Tate type. I got the cigar, bro. I'm like, look, you gotta watch Bambi, otherwise women won't respect you.
No, like those, like I feel like in the 90s it was those
oh yeah, like in like the. Those yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Like a picture of an ocean, and then it'd
yeah,
be like,
yeah, and then hang in there.
And then yeah. Like the way to be is to like let the waves crash over you and don't drown. Whatever Jack, whatever his name was, you can just put some of those quotes. I actually did that when I was recapping True Detective season 2. Digression. I made a bunch of like fake inspirational poster quotes with,
but they're all Russ Cole.
No, True Detective season 2 was all
Colin Farrell
quotes.
When he's berating the children and calling them gay slurs.
I need to find those. They were
Doesn't he beat up his son's bully?
He threatens him,
but didn't he give him like a titty twister or something?
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
True Detective.
We're in the weeds.
True Detective season 2 is a fucking dream, man. It's like it's a fever dream where you're like, what is?
Yeah, I watched the first episode of that season. I was like, I'm good, but now I would love it probably.
You should actually watch it.
No, you would love it. You would really love it. I think a lot of us would go back and just be like, that's the problem, is sometimes you miss a show or whatever, and then there's just a glut of trash, and you go back to something and you're like, look how good we had it, huh? We had it so good. We didn't even know.
Yeah. I did not take it seriously at the time. I think in the zone that I'm in now, I would enjoy it a little bit more, but it's not perfect. I feel like every actor in that movie, in that show, is like in a different movie. Like none of them are in the same thing, but they're doing their best.
Someone will try and tell me that Taylor Kitsch and Colin Farrell are in the same show, and I just still to this day don't believe them. Even IMDb is right in front of my eyes. So I'm like, what show are they both in?
I know. And Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams. Yeah.
Well, we've already gone on a digression, which are welcome six. Here. Yeah. But to get to the heart of the matter, tell us about your relationship with Miami Vice and how you got into it. I know I didn't show it to you for the first time, so there must have been someone.
I think I was starting to like really seriously get into Michael Mann stuff. But my history with Michael Mann is the first one I ever saw. I saw Public Enemies in theaters as a young lad at like 12 years old. And I think it was an empty theater and I was with a babysitter of some sort.
What an assignment. Little baby responsible rough just sitting there.
Because that's what enemies. I wanted to fucking see, all right?
So
oh,
I
said, you requested
I'm picking,
it.
No, I'm that's picking what I mean. The movie.
That's what I mean, Katie.
I was like, you're taking me to the along. Movie. Yeah. I say, and then I hand them $20 and say, hey, go get a soda. Leave me alone. I got movies to watch. No, so it was...
How did you even decide on Public Enemies at the
age? Because it looked cool. You got Johnny Depp, who was still cool at the time, and he's got the cover of him at the gun. I mean, what 12-year-old wouldn't see that and be like, I'm having that.
You came out of the womb like this, Rob.
Katie, you got to realize at age 11, I was trying my best to memorize all of Scarface just for fun, just as something to do.
Wait, Blake, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, like, I've got a sister, my brother and sister, my brother is 8 years older than me. my sister is 6 years older than me. So she would have been like 18 years old when I was 12, obviously. So I know exactly what Rob's talking about, because my sister used to work, like when she, one of her first jobs out of high school, she was a travel agent. And like some days my mom and dad would be working and my sister would go, I'll come to this, like the mall, the shopping center where I work. And I would make her go and buy me movie tickets to movies that I wasn't allowed to go to. And I would go to the movies all day. Like I would just leave and she'd just go, can you come back after each one and just check in on me so I know you're alive? I'm like, yeah, sure. But I'd be like, that one. And she had no idea what it was. She'd buy all the tickets. She'd give me some money for a snack. And then she'd leave and go to work all day. And I would go and see it. So it's just so funny. It just brought back this like really crisp memory of me, you know, probably seeing like a couple of random movies and then having 2 hours and going, oh, can you just buy one to the Spice Girls movie as well? Because I couldn't get into anything else at the time. Nothing else lined up. Had a very funny couple of movie marathons, thanks to courtesy of my sister's day job at the time. Oh man, that's so funny, Rob.
So back to Public Enemies, okay, though. So I saw that like as like a 12-year-old. I had no idea what it was. I didn't know who any of the players were other than Johnny Depp and Christian Bale. And then I think in high school, I watched Heat for the first time. Not because I knew it was directed by some genius auteur, just for Pacino, De Niro.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think I didn't really realize what was... I just thought it was like a dumb action movie. And then that scene, you know, the cough. I was like, that's good. And then the other stuff, it works. Yeah, I didn't really quite understand what I was watching. And then I got in college. I was like, oh, no, this movie is like the best movie ever. Watched Collateral. And then I think the next one would have been Miami Vice. And that was probably like when I started getting into Letterboxd and then seeing people be like, no, this movie's actually awesome. Like this movie that was hated at the time, you know, that whole cult discovering, oh, no, people love Speed Racer and love Miami Vice. And you're actually the idiot if you don't get it. That's when I started kind of discovering that whole subgroup of people. And then I watched Miami Vice and I was like, yeah, this is great.
Wait, so how long have you been on Letterboxd?
2015.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I know. I actually got on Letterboxd because the class after Roberts convinced me to get on. So that was 2020. I was like, should I do this? And they were like, yeah, do it. So that's my students made me do it.
But no, I love Letterboxd because also when you just like passively rate a movie, you can get dragged on Twitter by like, you know, prominent filmmakers making shows, animated shows about Scott Pilgrim because you rated Under Siege 2 too low in their opinion, which...
I got to defend them on that because you probably did rate it too low. What did you give on your
I think I gave it 2.5. I think I gave it 2.5.
All right. See, that's why you got to not do ratings. That's why you got to not do ratings. You either go no like, and then 5 stars, just so people know the barometer of what is.
I stopped doing ratings. I just do reviews.
I think I've stopped for the most part. I will just forget doing ratings. I'm like, yeah, I watched that. I just need to know, like, just to catalog my insanity when it comes to consuming media, as opposed to that. But yeah, it's we gotta love Letterboxd. That's great. But no, it's so funny. Like it is like a true subcultural connection where you say, and then there's like the people who will change a poster and you're like, okay, this is community. This is a community of weirdos. I like it.
Yeah.
You had some thoughts before we started recording about the poster changing option on Letterboxd.
Oh yeah. Well, my thoughts are that has been an interesting feature just because it's given me insight of what certain people's tastes are. And you know what? If you, certain posters, if you make the cover art something bad, I'm just like, okay, I've lost all respect for you. not just on cover art, just in life in general. You just probably, we probably don't see eye to eye on certain things.
I don't think I pay enough for that ability to change the poster.
And you know what? Good.
I pay for the like.
I do too.
Or whatever. That's worth it to me. I love the stats. I love not having.
Yeah, you gotta have the stats. Gotta have the stats.
Yeah, no, it's too good. Once they give you like a little taste, you're like, ooh, this is good. I'm in. I would say this though, Rob. When speaking very specifically about Miami Nice, on Miami Nice about Miami Vice, there are some really cool teaser posters.
Yes.
For Miami Vice, very specifically, one I'm thinking of in particular is the Sunny and Isabella poster.
No Law, No Order.
The No Law, No Order. Like the, no. Those
okay, movies. I'm looking at the. I'm doing a quick Google search.
So there's like the teaser posters that are great of the individual characters.
Oh, those are good. Those are good, like official art.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like the bullshit, like. I haven't seen this, but like if I saw someone change the Reservoir Dogs poster to like a box of crayons, I'd be like, okay, you're no longer in high school. This can't be considered cool to you anymore.
Do they have unofficial posters on Letterboxd as options?
Yes. Like, yes, they do.
So it's one of
and
the
some of them are really, really bad. It's just the worst graphic design ever. And then certain people are like, I like this. This is cool.
I think it's also a reaction to the absolutely terrible fucking thumbnails that are on every streaming service where like one of my favorite films is Zodiac. And there's a terrific teaser poster of the original Zodiac, which is like the Golden Gate Bridge and the fog and Zodiac and the tagline of the movie. And what they've decided to do on Netflix is just take three weird, like Marvelized floating head versions of Robert Downey Jr., Jake Gyllenhaal, and Mark Ruffalo, and just plug it on top of that, like, and obscure that image. And, like, that's the poster for Zodiac. And you're like, there are like 40 fucking amazing official posters of Zodiac. And you chose that one. You chose, like, you decided to Photoshop this shit. Jesus Christ, Netflix, wake up to yourselves.
The floating heads poster design is so bad.
Ugh.
And like last night, another digression I'm going on, I rewatched They Shoot Horses, Don't They? In preparation for Bleak Week at American Cinematheque. And
nice.
That movie made me feel so awful. It is probably the bleakest American movie ever made. I hadn't seen it in a decade, so I was like, oh my God, I forgot this is so intense. And then I was looking at the posters and it's like a floating Jane Fonda head and like a floating head of Michael Slazarin. And like, it's like, looks like a romance. And you're like, no, dude, this is as far from the tone as you're going to get. It's like, sometimes you get these really bleak, upsetting movies and they try to be like, here's Juliette Binoche's head. And you're like, no, it's the lovers on the bridge. It's about two homeless people who fall in love. Like, it's really intense.
It's so not quirky.
No, it's not a quirky romance. So the floating heads.
This doesn't have Zooey Deschanel in it. It's not, this is not what you're looking for.
It's like if
they if it did, it wouldn't end good for her. Let me tell you.
It's like if they made a Miami Vice poster and it'd be like all the floating heads and it looks like, you know, it's like Gong Li and Colin Farrell like looking off into the distance, which actually might actually get at the romantic aspect.
It would probably work.
But when you saw Miami Vice, like, I mean, you were already all in on.
I was all in and like, I'm the type of person where like, if I really respect an artist, even if I don't quite get the movie, I trust that they are smarter than me and I will eventually get to their level. It'll just click one day and I'll be like, yeah, this is amazing. But Miami Vice, I already liked from the get-go. And then over time, it's really like in the last 2 years, it's just something that I put on, like, I need the first 30 minutes. That's it. And then I can go about my day.
Well, I saw you rewatched it and rated it 5 stars on Letterboxd last
night. Oh yeah. No, it's been in the fives for a couple years now.
Good. Yeah. We like to hear it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so funny that it's like you need those movies in your roster though, for as many movies as we collectively watch and knowing your Twitter, it's like, even though, and it's sort of sad to say, because the app kind of whenever I hear about people who give great Twitter and then they wean themselves off for their own health, I'm happy for them. But I'm also like, could Rob be on more? Yes, he could be on more.
The trick is to post harder. Gotta post harder.
Do I want all the notifications? Yes, I do. You know, like I'm gonna flag it. You know, like let's just notify me when you're on one. Like there's certain people like Rob. I'm like, oh, he's on, right? Yes, let's go through this.
Yeah, thing. Did you see me getting into it with the Clint Eastwood account a couple weeks ago?
Oh,
you know,
no,
how there are now all these fake Clint Eastwood accounts, and but one is hell bent on proving that they are authentic, even though they are clearly not. They claim to be someone who works with Clint, and they're like, I'm proving that I work with Clint, and I just was like, show us his cock then. And then they got really mad at me. And then they're like, what are you fucking gay? And then like, it's just like all this, it became like a whole thing between me and the Clint Eastwood account. It was
you're
pretty
fighting
good.
Misinformation online is what you're doing.
I know.
Okay?
I know.
Yeah. Katie's like
truth
a,
and
Katie's
consequences.
Like a, Katie's like a therapist. You know what you're doing, huh? Yeah.
You're just drilling down into, you know, I'm one of those therapists who enables people, but it's like, you're drilling down, you're finding out the truth. You're combating, you know, imposters on Twitter, on Elon Musk's Twitter.
Exactly. Back to Miami Vice though, which I watched this morning, and I always forget Justin Theroux is in this movie. Mm. And I love how little he does and how much he does with as little he does.
Yes.
Because he's just in the background chewing fucking gum, and he'll say one word and you're like, hell yeah, Justin Theroux. you just saved the mission, dude.
Yeah. No, we love in the shootout when he like does his little roll.
Oh my God. Right. I remember the first time I watched the movie when he went watching him get his leg shot out and then he does the roll. I was like, this is, yep. Yeah, that's movies, baby.
And it's such a Michael Mann thing, but like then taking off his very stylish belt.
His belt.
And then tourniqueting his own leg, then rolls, and then just starts firing again. And you're like, this movie gets it. It absolutely gets what cool is. This is what it is. You can't teach people this. People just have instincts for like, this is going to be totally rad. And I love, especially because Theroux's like a writer, also an actor, obviously, like, and came up as an indie filmmaker. I love when a kind of like director/director tangent just pops in and like makes something insanely better. A big comfort movie of mine recently is the 2012 Jack Reacher. And I just love everything. Like when I see Werner Herzog in that movie, I just can't even believe it. I still don't believe it. It's like 2023. It's Werner Herzog, guys. It's the fucking coolest movie of all time. He's the villain. It's the best as soon as you see his face.
So friend of the pod, former guest Corey Everett, who made the Cinephile game, and he made this additional pack called like the Action Pack or something. It has a card with Werner Herzog in it. And from Jack Reacher, and I got to give Werner a copy of the game with his card in it and like show it to him because I had dinner with
him last
year.
I bet he was like, I can't wait, this looks amazing.
He is just not
about things like that.
He's a very Bavarian temperament.
Bavarian.
But he's a lovely guy. He's a very sweet guy.
Of course. I believe it.
But he also, talking to him is like exactly what you think. Like, you're just like, why am I listening to Werner Herzog like describe the process of how to hypnotize a chicken right now?
Yeah.
Like, it just.
No, he used to come to Chapman for like pretty regularly. Yeah, I saw him speak twice. And it's like, he's going there to talk about film and stuff. And I remember at one point he was talking about bees and he was like, the bumblebees are dying. And it was like the world is coming to an end because the bees just like went off for 10 minutes about bumblebees.
Sounds like it. Yes.
Yeah. It's on brand.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is a good point that whenever you have like a filmmaker in a film, it there's a certain level of comfort or something there. Yeah. Like Sydney Pollack whenever he's in anything.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely rules.
Another movie I just recently rewatched, Michael Clayton, classic.
Yeah.
Yes.
That Michael Clayton, Miami Vice are kind of movies that for me lately, that those two and Silence of the Lambs has been a big one of like they've been my lately go-to, just throw it on for 30 minutes. Just to get a little taste in the background. like Silence of the Lambs, I watched for the first time in my life, like maybe 10, 12 years ago. And I didn't revisit it until like 2 years ago. And since then, I've watched it like six times in the last 2 years, just because got to have a little taste of it. And Miami Vice is like that, where it's like one day you'll just be thinking about Colin Farrell just being like 11:47, you know, just that little gesture of him looking at his watch or fucking, I've been rewatching Eastbound and Down lately and John Hawks, who plays Alonzo.
Yes.
It's so funny to see him in Eastbound and Down because he's hilarious in that show and yeah. Watching going from that. And then him just the down on his luck CI who walks into traffic. It's nuts.
John
such a tragic figure. Yeah.
John Hawks. Like I'm such a monstrous fan of Deadwood. So like the fact that Sol Star, who's like such a, you know, stoic moral compass in an amoral world that is. And then he just walks in front of a truck that fucking hurt. And then you see him when he's kind of dang, like this guy can do anything. He's fucking awesome.
Yeah. He's awesome.
He's absolutely awesome.
There was a Twitter prompt going around, and not to like talk too much about Twitter, but we spend so much time on there, but
sure.
It was like, you know, who is an actor that when you see them, they instantly elevate a movie that they're in. And I think John Hawks is one. Mm. I think the entire cast.
John Ortiz.
John Ortiz. We love
John Ortiz, who's doing just the best accent.
I was just gonna say, as a kid who so grew up good. Memorizing Scarface, he must be your guy in this movie.
He's not in Scarface, he's in Carlito.
No. I mean, just the accent.
Just the vibe. Yeah, of course. I'm sorry. I was ready to get upset. I was like, different movie.
But if he waltzed into Scarface, he would be like,
for sure.
He could be a character that is in this world. Absolutely.
Yeah, he could just drop Jose Euro in the background of Scarface.
Yeah.
No, you could make a movie called Son of Scarface. And it would be Jose Euro.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Let's do it.
Come on. Now we're cooking.
Now we're getting some sequel material.
Yeah.
Miami Vice 2, Son of Scarface.
Son of Scarface.
Straight to DVD.
Digitally de-age Jose Euro, for God's sake. Let's do it. Get him in the volume over at Disney.
We don't even need Michael Mann to do it. We can just get Michael Mann's. We can get Justin Lieberman to do it.
That was out of the question. We weren't even thinking about that.
No.
I was going to say one of his cinematographers, but they're too big of legends to make it the straight to DVD Miami Vice sequel, Son of Scarface.
I should hope they have better things cooking.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sure they do.
But you know what? You just did talk about forging a friendship on the back of Speed, and that is a very famous John McTiernan cinematographer who just bounced straight into the director's chair to make another action, stone cold action classic.
It's true. It's true.
I love Yanni DeBont, anything he does. anytime I see where I'm like, this movie just looks so good, and then I'm like, Yanni DeBont shot it?
Yeah.
There's just billowing smoke and red lights everywhere.
I love what you're talking about, though, Rob, with gestures, because I... As a guy, as a bearded man, I often think about like I'll take a drink when I'm out with friends, and then I instinctively go to wipe liquid from my face, and I remember like Sonny just pouring away mojito out of his handlebar moustache with Isabella, and I like in just a second I'm like, I am Colin Farrell. Like I am.
I had an ice cream cone yesterday. And I looked disgusting, and I was just like, "Hell yeah, dude! I'm Sunny, baby.
You need to go handlebar. You guys both need to go handlebar mustache for at least a day.
I'm recovering from a goatee, thanks to a friend's Bucks weekend. What do you call it? What do you guys call it?
Oh, bachelor.
Bachelor party. Yeah, bachelor.
What do you call it?
I'm recovering from a goatee. So it's like
a Bucks party. What?
Yeah,
what
Bucks. Is that? I don't know whether it's Australian or European. Like, because I think it was like Stag Night, and then it turned into Bucks.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
okay.
Stag Night, Bucks. So yeah, yes.
Isn't the Bachelorette the hen do?
Hens. Hens night.
Yeah. Stag turned into Bucks.
Yeah, Stag turned into Bucks.
All right.
Yeah, and then it's hens. Don't worry about it. Australia's fucking backward, man. It's really backward. It's backward.
You're not. We're worse. So, Rob, I did say to you that one thing we've been talking about recently on the show is ideal Miami Vice double features.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you tested one out last night, a triple feature.
Oh, yeah.
Effect.
I did a triple feature.
How did it... Well, so, what are the results? What have you deduced?
Oh, it was great. It was good. So first of all, when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about how there are some obvious choices you could go with. Because I feel like, like a movie like this, where it's like got that vulgar auteurist type of thing going on, very popular amongst the young generation of film Twitter Letterboxd community. You could take another director like that who is also kind of a similar machismo formalist type of filmmaker, like Tony Scott, I feel like is often compared to Michael Mann. And that to me, that's boring. That's not a fun thing to do. And then I was thinking, what's up?
But what Tony Scott movie? Cause I love Tony.
Well, so if you were going to do that, it wouldn't be like, It probably Man on Fire.
Yeah.
Just because formally what he's doing, you could draw comparisons. Like, you could tell both movies, they're just shooting the shit out of everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Man on Fire is another script like Miami Vice, I imagine, if you read it on paper.
Like, it probably does not look at all.
It's in your mind's eye.
There probably is no script. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's completely straight up and down.
So I think that would be a good one. And then I'm trying to think, what were some of the other ones that are like, that's boring?
Bay would be another
Bay,
one, right?
Bay, yeah, yeah. And so then I thought of like Ambulance, of like a recent one. Because Michael Bay is like kind of the more purely action Michael Mann type of thing, where there's no melodrama, there's no, you know, well, that's probably doing a disservice to people, so I won't say that. But
I think I'd go with Pain and Gain.
Pain and Gain. Pain and Gain works for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why that just popped in my head.
But then I was thinking about Johnny Toe.
Ugh.
And then I landed on Drug War.
Nice.
That was the one I think would be a good one. But then I didn't want to stop there. I wanted to do a triple feature. Drug War, Rush Hour 2, and Miami Vice.
Is Rush Hour 2 Brett Ratner?
It is.
Yeah. But
you go with the vulgar auteurs.
Well,
Jackie
is the true auteur of Rush Hour 2.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. But, yeah. But, because the thing about Drug War is, It works on like kind of a plot level where it's these guys undercover doing a drug bust type of thing, but you don't have the camaraderie, you don't have the vibes. That's where Rush Hour 2 comes in, and you got Chinese guy, black guy, brothers, and that's that leads you to Crockett and Tubbs, and that's a pretty goat triple feature in my opinion.
Very good, very good. Johnny Toe is a guy who I've only really started to discover in the last year or so, and I'm just
obsessed. The greatest. What have you watched?
Breaking News.
Uh-huh.
What else did I watch? Breaking News, and then I watched... There were two that came out. This is an Australian a little indie Australian Blu-ray label like popped up pretty recently, and they are called, I'm gonna go and get them because I want to
have you watched Exiled yet?
Yes So I watched
Exiled. That might be my favorite action movie ever.
Yeah, Exiled Breaking News came out on this thing called the Chameleon Collection in Australia, and they've got a couple.
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that. I'm not region free yet, so I can't make the purchase.
But I saw Breaking News, and I was like, you know, talk about if you were charting the 6 degrees of separation between all the president's men and Heat, it's fucking Breaking News. My two favorite things, like a hard boiled sort of journalism drama and like a heist, high concept action. And I was mesmerized. One of my buddy Alexi sent me a text and he goes, Breaking News will be one of your movies. You need to watch it right now. I'm like, okay, I got this. So yeah, Johnny Toe, brilliant. And Exiled is brilliant. Fucking out of control.
Yeah, Katie, have you seen that?
I haven't. Johnny Toe's a little bit of a blind spot for me, but it's been on my radar for a long time. I think you sent me Breaking News.
I was gonna say also, in the sometimes care packages that I send you, I'm going to send you I'm going to send you the next part, which is Election and Election 2, which are both coming out on the Chameleon Collection. So
have you watched those ones, Blake?
No. Because what happened was, and this is like inside baseball, they weren't happy with the print of Election 2. So they pumped the brakes on the release very quickly, and then they've now refreshed it. So they're like Election 2 now fully restored. There was a delay, but now they're coming together. So when I get the final copies, Katie, I will send you a care package.
Yeah, that was so excited. Good.
Looking forward to it. I know I need to prioritize Breaking News in my watch list. It's like everything just gets put aside because something else comes up that I have to
rewatch.
Well,
you're talking to people
forever.
Like Bruce Dern and Tilda Swinton and doing 48 triple R like Q&As.
Busy. I had to put my watch list to the side to rewatch my Bleak Week stuff so I could get them the program notes. So
we'll be right back after this quick break.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Going back to this, going off what you guys were talking about in terms of like releases, like, you know, physical media releases, I just want to briefly touch on some news / gossip conspiracy theories that are going on with something that we've been following very closely, which is the Black Hat 4K. Is that what it is? Which is, we found it's coming out from Arrow and it's been delayed. But we also feel like there's some little whisperings that maybe it's been delayed because they're going to put the famed FX director's cut release.
The Swen cut, baby.
The hacker cut. Josh Lewis was tweeting about hearing rumblings of a director's cut that's never had an official release before, but he wouldn't say what the movie was.
Yeah, being coy. While hanging with Sanj, he was like, they'll never know what I'm talking about. We know what you're talking about, buddy.
I'm like, should I pre-order this thing?
Yeah.
Are they going to put the director's cut on there?
I pre-ordered it in Australia too. I've already pre-ordered it from my favorite boutique Blu-ray distributor, and it's been delayed, of course. And we thought that it was just a delay in the cover art. And now folks over at our Discord, if you're a Patreon member, you're on our Discord, we're like tracking the story of like, they didn't like the cover art, they've gone back to the theatrical cover art, and it was just like, oh, that's a bit boring, you know, like could we not have done better than the floating head of Chris Hemsworth? But this is actually genuinely exciting. If it's delayed because they're going to put that bad boy out in 4K, that actually becomes like one of the releases of the year, because it's been
it's a big deal.
It's like legalizing marijuana. Like, people have been dealing it on the street.
I know.
And it's like, now it's like, it's, you can get it, legally acquire it, and you're like, you know, and then when we tell our kids about the Swen cut, they'll think we're insane. You know, that's you know, it's exciting times.
Are you a Black Hat fan, Robert?
Oh, big time. I will not. I'm not going to pre-order it, but that's only because I wait for sales, because that's the art of the deal.
Yes.
Okay. I only get deals.
Okay, good.
So I don't pre-order shit.
All yeah. right.
But these I will
are,
be
these
getting.
These lifestyle tips that you need to be putting on.
See what I said about go back. Just have another taste. It's like your favorite friend who drinks and they stop drinking. You're like, please, come on.
Come on. You're good.
You're good. You're not completely derailing your whole life.
Have 10 beers and watch Bambi. Is that one of them? I'm going to start writing that down.
That's the, oh, come on. That's a good
night. I don't pre-order anything.
That is a good
night. But you have to have the hand gesture, because that's
the art of the deal, baby.
Out of the deal.
It'll be a picture, a stock photo of a guy doing this.
Jesus Christ. So
that's one of those things I started doing ironically, and then in my daily life I'll find myself watching a movie and I'm like just looking like really intensely, like that picture of Lenny from The Simpsons.
I love that Lenny from The Simpsons meme. That's the best. No, I have the leaning forward really intensely, like on the couch, like this.
Yeah.
My wife's like, "You're right." I'm like, We're in the zone here.
We're in the man zone, baby.
We're in the zone. I can soak in it. Rob, I want to ask you. For a laugh, as a young 11, 12 year old, you're trying to memorize Scarface. Has there been a movie in the last decade that you've tried to memorize?
Not as like consciously as Scarface, because Scarface, I would go on soundboards. You know how they had those websites where you could just listen to the sound bites, and I would just listen to all the clips of like just Tony Montana saying various curses and like try to like memorize it and like get the accent right in my prepubescent voice. And so nothing like that.
Bet
but
your
like,
insult game in school was
pretty
fire.
I was brutal. I was brutal. Everyone was a cockroach. I was calling everyone.
Can you say it for us in the accent?
Fucking cockroach.
And you're like, Robert, get out of class. He said to his poor substitute teacher. You just rip into them.
And then I said, fuck Gaspar Gomez. Fuck the fucking Diaz brothers. Fuck them all. And then they're like, you need to go home. You need to go home. Call your mother. You're out of here.
I need to know what happened in your childhood that made you.
I had a really normal, nice childhood.
Yeah.
Right.
I just loved Scarface. I just loved Al Pacino.
When did
I loved
you see
Scarface.
It? How did you see it at yes. a young age? Like, what
made
you so Pacino?
You know what? I think it became, what Pacino pilled me was The Godfather.
Okay.
That's my guy. That's my guy. And then Scarface became this thing where it's like, that's the movie I need to see.
Okay.
I don't know how it got in my head as this, like, that's the thing you need to see that they're not letting you see.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of broke my parents down. They're like, all right. and then I watched Scarface and then like, kind of allowed it to take over my life a little bit, as impressionable children do.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I Batman Forever like rewired my
Batman
brain.
Forever. Batman Forever. Interesting story about that one, because that was a very formative movie for me.
Has it taken so long for us to get to Chase Meridian? How has it taken?
Come on,
what is going on right now?
Schumacher is one of my guys. We talk about him all the time.
Of course.
I love that her introduction in that movie is basically, hello, I'm a doctor and I'm very horny.
Like, that's her entire character.
That's her whole character.
And yes. You know what? We were better as a society for it.
No, but so Batman Forever for me was that because somehow we had the tape. And I watched it and my mom was like, I think this is too violent for, you know, a 5-year-old or whatever. And so she gave it to my cousins and she gave it to my aunt, was basically like, lose this. I don't want to see it. Like, you guys take it, whatever. And so the next day I was like, Mom, where's the movie? And she's like, oh, I lent it to your cousins. Don't you think they'd like watching it? Like, don't you want to share it? And thinking I would forget about it.
Yeah.
Thinking eventually I'll find a new thing. And every fucking day I was like, when are we getting it back? When are we getting the movie back? When are we getting Batman Forever back? And eventually she called my aunt. She's like, just give me the tape. He's annoying me. And I'm more annoyed than
probably
I care
didn't even
about
take...
his development.
Yeah, I probably didn't even take the tape out of her car. She's like, all right.
Probably not.
just drove back.
And then we got on a tangent of Batman Forever, but to answer your question, have I recently tried to memorize something? Like, I'll just watch certain clips of things and just happen to memorize them. Like, there was a certain period in college where if you found me at a party and I had like a few too many and I got you in a corner, I might do the Glengarry Glen Ross alcohol and ruin your night and really annoy you. I would just I just got to tell you something real quick. Just cornering my friend.
Amazing.
Always be closing. Just fucked up.
That's not a night ruiner. That's a great story. You're like,
oh, I thought it was awesome. Like, I thought everyone was having a great time.
What'd you get up to at that party? Robert cornered me again and gave me the Glengarry.
Gave me the Glengarry.
I'm teaching them how to be closers.
I can't remember where I heard this, but I remember I heard someone say, because like when I think about Pacino in Godfather, and then when I think about like Pacino in Heat, or and they're in between as Scarface, it feels like a completely different actor.
Well, that's the Baldwin has a great bit about how there are stages of him.
Yes.
And now the current one, he's got sort of a Southern type of thing. Like he's got kind of an I do declare type
Pacino?
Of thing. Yeah. He's got a little bit of a Southern twang.
But someone was saying that like Scarface, like kind of like broke him a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, that's
like,
Marin. Never, that was Marin. Marin said.
Oh yes, Marin said it.
Marin
yes.
said because he saw him.
It was the Austin Butler article episode, right?
Yeah, it was that, and then he also referenced it on the Jeremy Strong one too.
Okay, but that's
Marin's observation.
Theory. Yes,
I don't agree with it.
You don't.
I just think it's the evolution. I think. I just think he's a really rhythmic actor and that's how, like, I just watched a great clip of him talking about, he loves repetition and like he was talking about doing Richard on the stage. And, once he did it the 85th time, it clicked with him. And that makes so much sense to me considering he's an actor who does so much with his hands. There's a flow, like a whole, give me all you got. Like, and then he comes out, you fall in love. He'll be writing this probably on the door.
There's a huge dynamic range in what he's doing, yeah, which course, is like he course. Goes soft and loud and like close and far and like operatic and low. Like it is interesting to see him evolve as an actor over the years because he's so wildly different in so many of these roles.
Well, Scarface is 83. He takes a couple of years. He does Revolution. And then there's like weird, dumb internet rumors. They're like Pacino. The Pacino we knew died. And like a guy came in and
they replaced
like,
him.
Replaced him in Sea of Love. And he was doing something completely different. But it's just like, it's also about like reflexively what's good. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, talking to a couple of our great friends, Dan Mecker and Connor O'Donnell from the B-Side podcast. And we're talking about Russell Crowe. And I'm just like, the guy that he was then, like more people wanted that larger than life Pacino. And so he just was allowed to lean into it. Like, and even in Heat, which is a Stone Cold masterpiece, you know, we learned about the Wild Ones, where Pacino will do six takes straight for you, giving you every potential piece of color on the character. And then the director goes, yeah, lock it. And then he'll just do like six more takes, absolutely unhinged. And some of those stay because they're more fun than the straight line reading. And it's like, well, what do you want this guy to fucking do? Like if he's more entertaining, more engaging, more dynamic when he's hitting these different registers, like not everyone needs to like be really quiet and sustained delivery. Like it's not who they are. Like he's got a tenor. It's like, do you want him to be like a quiet, boring devil as John?
No, Nelson, yeah. He said that in interviews where he's like, sometimes you gotta go hard to hit the high notes and sometimes you hit them and sometimes you don't, but that's how I do it.
Yeah.
I think that in the past few years, like people have equated good acting with like realism and like sort of lower key kind of like
dummies,
quiet performances. Oh, this person like disappeared into the role, or like, you know, performances that are like more subtle. And like, I really do appreciate, you know, an Al Pacino going completely over the top, or like even like Austin Butler getting like completely broken by being possessed by the ghost of Elvis.
Or Jake Gyllenhaal in an ambulance.
Jake Gyllenhaal in anything.
Anything. I don't really love the movie Prisoners, but my favorite part about that movie is Jake Gyllenhaal, and when he's just the best. Like, he's doing that soft spoken voice. He's like, yeah, you like kidnapping girls? Where'd you take them? They were in your van? I know you took them. You were driving, but you weren't driving. Come on. You take those girls. And you just keep repeating. Yeah, you like that? You
and
freak?
He's got that.
You like this?
He's got the. He's got
getting
the
crazier and crazier.
He's losing his fucking mind.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I really like Prisoners, but my focal character is him.
You know, course.
Like that movie is really dark and it's a fucking hard watch. And Hugh Jackman is really going for it and it's good and it's got great actors across the board. But Jake Gyllenhaal, I'm obsessed with him in that movie. But it's even like we're talking about Miami Vice, right? And so it's like you can have Louis Tozar being Montoya, who's so deliberate and so calm and so restrained. It's like every sentence that might have had five words has now three. Every, you know, monologue that is like two pages long is like, let's just make it a third of a page because this guy is so much more menacing. And then you have John Ortiz, who is fucking chewing the movie up before your eyes. And you're like, guess what? It's okay to like both. And in fact, it's okay for them to coexist because that's the flight. Like, that's who people are. Like, you have really quiet, reserved folk who you sometimes have to lean in to listen to. And then you have like blustery individuals and like they're both got their own attraction and it's okay to love both. And I love both in Michael Mann stuff. He's okay with like big and small personalities. And I think, you know, Pacino's Lowell Bergman is just, you know, he's look at the register of Lowell Bergman in The Insider. Like he's like goes from like super quiet.
That is top five Pacino performance, hands down.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. And when he's berating the host, I imagine you going up to someone at a party. I just had like an image of you going up to someone at a party and talking to them like he talks to the hotel rep when he's like, what a motherfucker? What a motherfucker?
Oh my god.
Good stuff.
Well, so as the guy, the Michael Mann podcast guy, because obviously there are a lot of Michael Mann guys, but you're the one with podcasts that people listen to. What is your favorite one? What is the origin of all this? What did it for you?
The first Michael Mann movie I saw absolutely was Last of the Mohicans, because I'm sure all of our like folks or older siblings, you know, in the VHS days, like something would come out at either the cinema or something would come out on VHS. And like parents who've got young kids, they're not necessarily, was the 80s and early 90s. So like they could give a fuck. My mom probably smoked three packs of cigarettes and drank the entire pregnancy. And this is what happened. But, you know, but at those times, I remember very distinctly, like when a new release VHS would come out, like the local video store, even a little mom and pop, like close to our house, the new release would just be on the hook on a Friday night, right? Like you're going down there on a Friday or Saturday night, you're picking it up. So I watched Mohicans a lot. And, you know, at the time it was like the world of Dances with Wolves. So like you see Dances with Wolves like 25 hours long and you're like, Jesus Christ. But it was like a fascinating sort of like neo-Western vibe. And then I saw Mohicans and I was like blown away. And it was obviously like it's hyper violent, really insanely romantic, like this intoxicant, perfect structure. You know, we've done that. So that was probably the first movie, but truly it was Heat. And I like you, Robert, had that sort of same thing. Like I watched it. There were scenes that were elevated, probably all of the ones that the most boring people who like the movie now say are the best. And then after a while, it was kind of like Heat. And then it was kind of in my mind. And then like, weirdly, The Insider was monstrous. Like it was obviously a behemoth in the awards talk, but it was just around. It was just a great movie. And it just took back to coming back to Heat and me fully connecting with all of Michael Mann movies. And so then from that time, it was kind of like seeing every Michael Mann movie in a theater, probably from Ali onwards. But I always just kept coming back. And I, the same thing, you know, it's so cool that you guys met at Chapman. And I just remember being in a film class and being a film geek in those classes. And everyone's talking about the French New Wave and, you know, Iranian cinema and Romanian cinema. And I'm like, yeah, but guys, what? How good's Heat, huh? And and a lot of these folk were just like, fucking Heat, like, get over it, you know? And I'm like, no, I flat out refuse. And so right from that moment, it kind of crystallized. I'm like, I know a lot of you guys are dismissing it. Oh, it's a Hollywood blockbuster. And everyone was just going through this like anti-Hollywood phase, as I think sometimes you have to do when you're journey to become a cinephile. But for me, that's what it was. It was like every single time, the more deep that I got into like, you know, I was doing deep research about film theory and postmodernist postmodernist theories and just about art in general and all this sort of stuff. And the deeper I got, the more resonant frequencies that this packaged Hollywood blockbuster had for me and the more layers I kept seeing to it. And so then it just became a salve. Like you said, I just need a little, just need a little taste of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'd watch, you know, 7 random movies from either New Hollywood or whatever. And I just kept coming back to Heat, and I would just see, you could almost see the lineage of all of these, both philosophical, formal, you know, and gestural stuff from an acting perspective, like seeing the acting lineage in the movie, music, and it just kept getting higher and higher. And I know it's such a weird and dumb thing to say, but it's like, I could never purge Heat from my system.
No.
And the only way to do that was an insane exercise such as One Heat Minute. It was like, literally, how the fuck do I get it out of my system? And that's what I've learned. It's like, with some of my favorite movies, I become so clinically obsessed with them. It's still sort of that like childlike impulse.
So are you now sick of Heat? Are you over it now, or are you still free?
No, now it's sacred.
It's
now like, I have to, I want to watch it in very specific things. I actually don't like watching it at home as much. Like, I'll wait for a rep screening, and especially, there's a couple of really great rep houses in Sydney, and the Randwick Ritz is fantastic. My favorite is the Hayden Orpheum, which is this beautiful Art Deco cinema. So if you guys are ever in Oz, and Katie, I'm going to say, when you come to Oz, we're going to that theater, because it's my favorite in Sydney. But if they're like playing a, you know, there was the 4K transfer, which I'm like, yeah, fine. But the 35 mil print of Heat, oh baby. I'm like, where is it playing? I'm fucking there. Like, that's, and so it's not completely gone, but it's almost like I needed to dissect it. It was almost like you're like an architect that goes into like a house that has been completely designed, and you're like gutting it, and you got to rip all the cornices off and like rip the roof off and like figure it all out, and then like remat and put it all back together. And that's how I've had to do it. But it's absolutely peerless. The thing now that happens though, Rob, like your, you know, some level of impatience with people changing the letterbox posters to bad choices. Mine is just when people are like, so what's the deal with Heat? Just anyone. And I'm just like,
do people still
off.
Do that?
Yes. Yes, they do. Some infuriating presences on social media like have those exact phrases. And I'm like, can you stop? It's been done. It's been litigated. The case is won. You know,
I did see it. I made a comment about it. And then anyway, I saw someone I know who I think is a dumbass logged Heat on Letterboxd with like 3 stars. And this person who I know, you don't. Okay. So before you make any judgments on me, I know this person. This person like made, it was like, perfect cinematography, perfect acting, perfect score, perfect writing. I just don't like the treatment of the women. And it's like, I mean, gave it a 3 stars. It's like, you're being disingenuous. Like, yes. That is just such bullshit. And you can't call it all perfect and then say this thing, 3 stars.
If this was a man or a male,
this was a man.
Identified this was a person, which I could have predicted from this review.
Yes.
That just like screams of performative.
Of course.
Whatever. Like not
of
even
course.
Allyship because it's
no,
like.
No, it's just bullshit. You just look like a fucking dumbass.
It's amazing when I have to like tell someone like a, like I was talking to someone about Beau is Afraid and they were like, well, isn't this kind of, I don't want to, Blake, if you haven't seen it, I don't know
I
if
haven't
you've
seen it yet.
Like,
I haven't seen it either.
Okay. Well, someone was like, don't you think it's like a little misogynist? Because like, and I'm like, no, like I think all the women in that movie have agency. And so it's like, whether they're like, women don't need to be represented as like perfect angels. I feel like they need to be represented as like having their own choices and their own, you know, like power to make decisions. But it's like, I just think I'm like, but women can be like mean and nasty. And I don't find that to be a misogynistic representation, but it is, it's like, I don't like when someone's like, oh, I don't like the treatment of women in Michael Mann films. It's like, well, you're not really digging into like what these female characters are doing or, you know, like how they function in the story. Like, I feel like they're adult women who have, and sometimes they're children as well, but like they have agency and choices, and sometimes they are being strung along by a man, but like they're all trying to like figure things out, and they are like, you know, they're well-rounded characters for
yeah,
the most part.
Of course. And even then, it's like, it's not an invalid criticism. But for me, that particular example is just saying everything is perfect. And then that one thing, it's just like, you're full of shit.
Yeah. I think, is there anything more insulting than a 3-star review on like what is objectively a 5-star movie?
Yeah.
It's like something about the 3 stars like really annoys me.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Like, it's so banal. I don't know. It's like, give it 2 stars or 5.
Just back to Heat and Michael Mann. I just then became obsessed. And, you know, I've heard some people, the guys who used to do the James Bonding podcast, Matt Gawley and co, used to say, like, even when it's a bad James Bond movie, it's a James Bond movie. And I just love that ethos of like, it's like, you know, with a Tony Scott movie or a Michael Bay movie, it's like, if that's your jam, and like with Michael Mann, he's my guy. So it was always like, even one of the movies that absolutely doesn't resonate with me. And as you said before, Rob, it's like, sometimes you're like, I don't connect with it, but that's my problem. Like, he's an artist that I really love and respect. I love so much of his work.
Yeah.
If there's a movie that doesn't click with me, it comes around. And it's like, even we were talking about Black Hat and the covers and stuff like that and the Swen cut. And like, the first time I saw Black Hat, I was like, that one's not for me. But it's not a bad movie. I know there's some things I love in it. And I'm like, but it just didn't connect with me. Like, the laser fucking guided Michael Mann movie. Like, even Public Enemies clicked with me. Ali, I fucking cry every time I watch that movie. All 3 versions of that fucking
movie. The only one I would say is a bad movie is The Keep.
Oh, come on. That's not
Keep
fair.
Sucks. I
no,
hate
it doesn't.
The Keep. It's boring. It's bad.
It's also, that's the hardest one to be like, objectively, if you didn't like it, because who knows how much of that is even really what he intended based on everything.
Of course.
Like
of course.
Was the most butchered.
I don't blame him for it.
But, you know, friend of the show, Meg Abbott, said, The Keep should never be watched digitally. You should only be you should find a cassette in a shed and pick it up and not know what's on it and then put it in. And it's like the Ring video. Like, that's the
okay. I like that. I can get behind that 100%.
Your aunt comes back with Batman Forever and in the case is The Keep. That's what happened to you as a child.
Yes. Boom.
That's not fair. I think we have
you
to
like The Keep.
We'll
have a different podcast about that.
Yeah.
I like The Keep.
Next time it's playing on a print, I will go see it.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to know that it's like, it has all these issues with like how it was made, but I appreciate the visuals. I think it's beautiful and the themes and stuff, but yeah, it has issues, but yeah, watch it on a tape that you find in the forest.
Yeah. Only in the forest when you're foraging through. But yeah, so like that's why I feel like and a lot of the flicks that we do, and Miami Vice is the one so far in Michael Mann. It's not to say that I'm sick of, but like Miami Vice is such a vibe movie that I constantly love revisiting it with Katie and our guests, because that's the movie that's like such a comfort. And as you said, you could just slice it up. I love how you said first 30, but for me, the first 30 is almost more of a trap than later bits. Like if you just caught like some of it on streaming or you're like half watching, you turn it on. Cause if I hear Numb Encore drop, I'm staying. Like it's over.
Yeah.
Like that 2 hours is gone. And so I just go, okay. I'll surrender to whatever plan I had. Oh, you got 7 podcasts to edit? Who gives a shit? I'm watching my own class. Stay up till 4 in the morning editing.
How big into the show were you?
Like in Australia, it had a, not the best, like, what do you call it? Like syndication, like not the best sort of syndication. Like I didn't see much of it. And then again, when I was going through like my real Michael Mann head phase, I watched like 2 or 3 seasons of it. I got 2 or 3 seasons on DVD that I watched pretty regularly and, was like kind of mapping out the chunks very nerdily about like the things that had resonated and carried through to the movie as part of a big bit of research that I was doing. But I wasn't like, like my parents went into it or anything like that. And I kind of was like, it just skated by me. I was a little bit too young at the time to be really into it. But since then I've gone back and watched them periodically. And now I actually want to upgrade and I'm the art of the deal. I'm waiting for a sale because it's really, expensive. The whole collection on Blu-ray that you can get.
Sure.
But I haven't gone back in a few years to check out all of the episodes. I haven't been as obsessed. What about you?
The only time I've really ever watched it was I was at a friend's apartment and he had it on in the background while we were having drinks.
Yeah.
Katie, what about you? I feel like you watched a lot of it. No,
no, not really. Actually, I think I was also a little bit too young for like to be into the series when it was on. I mean, I obviously remember it was like a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
sure.
But I've seen a few early episodes of it. I actually watched it in grad school, which is when I first saw Miami Vice movie with my professor Todd Boyd, who I've talked about on this podcast. But he showed the pilot of Miami Vice and then the movie of Miami Vice, like screened it in class one day. Yeah, and so that was the first.
That's sick.
Sick double feature.
You'd love Todd Boyd. He's the best. He's such a
get him on the pod. Get him on the. Get him on the air.
We've been trying to get him on the pod for a while because Katie tells these stories. What was his? What was that course that you did?
The class was called Reagan's America (parentheses Crack Nation). and we just watched, we read books about Reagan, like huge, thick books about Reagan, and then watched movies about drug dealers. And it was amazing.
That's right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. And he has given himself the nickname, the Notorious PhD. So.
is he a white dude? No. Okay, cool. Never mind. I was like, that's a corny white dude thing to say, but
he's like a very fly black man. Yes.
Yes.
He's got great style. Love that man so much. Yeah.
So Robert,
we got to get him on.
What is your favorite man movie now?
Heat. 100%. Heat and the top three is Heat, Insider, Miami Vice.
Oh.
But Thief is climbing the ranks.
Yes.
Because the first time I watched Thief, I was like, this is good. It's a first film, though. I was just like, now it's like another one where it's like I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm thinking about James Caan in it all the fucking time. Just the opening, just watching them crack into the safe. It's just, you're just vibing. Or specifically, my favorite part of the movie is the end where he just goes full bozo mode. And he's like, fuck it, fuck it. Fuck it, tells his wife, get the fuck out, fuck you, blows up his dealership, blows up the bar, full bozo. Every time in my life, I'm just like, should I do that?
I think that there should be a subscription to Rob retelling what happens in movies with a beer, like, because he's like, so anyway, James Caan is cracking safes, fuck, I'm full vibing it. Anyway, and at the end, full bozo mode, he tells his wife, get the fuck out.
He's like, get out of here, you fucking bitch.
That's just your like, podcast, Rob, and you can do it.
That would be good.
Lex G style.
Oh, Lex G
No, I would never do anything to overshadow the king.
No. I understand.
All respect to Lex G. There's no
And by the way, if I've said Lex G terms like bozo mode and sheen, comes from him. Just know that. Gotta give him the credit.
No, we give him the respect. We love a Lex G. We love a Lex G. Yeah. In fact, I've tried to reach out to him a couple of times because I'm like, do you want a pod? Like, it might be fun.
He would absolutely never take it.
No, he hasn't said yet. He's never said.
And then I'm only saying this because I doubt he listens, but he will say no or just not respond. And then months later, get drunk and then tweet, no one wants to help me.
I know. We love Lex G. We wish him the best.
Hope you're well, Lex G.
Yes. Hope you're doing well. We give all respect. Hope the podcast is going to continue and he does his bits and no one else does it the way he does
No one does it like
Lex, and he is one of the sharpest and most astute like chroniclers and analyzers of like the very weird sort of film nerd ecosystem that we find ourselves in. And that has like forged our friendships and our relationships. But yeah, no one does it better than him. No one breaks that scene down better than him.
Yeah, we need him. We need him.
I know.
Just like we need Robert back.
Yes,
on Robert. Oh, back on Twitter.
And back here.
I'm still on.
No, but come on. Just give us a taste, you know? Give us the first 30 minutes of a rant. I want to get in on that shit. It's like a drug.
He'll be back once he recovers from the Clint Eastwood fake account.
You know what's so funny about that? He was coming for me all day and then followed me. That account followed. I was like, what just happened? Like, this is so weird.
In like 2 weeks, you're going to get a phone call from Clint Eastwood, and we want you back on the show to talk all about it. Man, thank you so much for being a part of the show and coming in to our roster. I know that we've been talking about you for some time coming on the show, and we've just been trying to find a time. So it's really awesome to connect. And this has been super fun. This has been super fun. Thank you so much. For embracing the fucking absolute wild digressions that this show can go on, we appreciate you.
I just hope I didn't bring more than normal. I hope this was just like a normal Miami Nice episode.
Yeah, it's enough. It's perfect. It's all vibes.
We talked about the movie the right amount. There wasn't too much Batman Forever content.
No,
listen, there's never enough.
And I'm so mad that we haven't gone down the Chase Meridian rabbit hole. And now I know what the next Patreon podcast with Katie and I is.
Yes.
I just want to talk all about Chase Meridian with Katie.
I just want to talk about Chris O'Donnell as Robin because literally. Oh my God. Him in that
doing
movie.
laundry. I bet that got you hot.
Listen, me seeing the Kiss from a Rose video when I saw O'Donnell in the Kiss from a Rose video, literally, like, I started puberty.
Yeah, sure.
My body was like, okay, that's what's up.
One last tangent while we're up back on the Batman Forever thing, we talk about like memorizing things and like dialogue. There's been a Jim Carrey Riddler line that's been in my head where where he calls Batman freak. I forget what the context is, but like it's like comma freak. Like he's like, yeah, what is that? Freak. Like he calls it's been in my head. For so long, just him calling Batman a freak is really
Jim
fun.
Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones both need like retroactive Oscars for their performances.
Apparently, Tommy Lee Jones hates him.
He did, He said, "I will not stand this
just because he was annoying him."
I will not,
which is hilarious. I love that. Yeah.
You know what? If the Oscars had any balls whatsoever, the real Oscars for that movie would go to one Sugar and Spice, and Michael Mann along Debbie Mazur and Drew Barrymore for their essential performances.
Absolutely.
So exciting. But look, man, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Okay.
You're the best. I appreciate you for coming on the show. Katie, thank you so much for...
Thanks for having me.
...bringing a student of cinema. And I feel like we got the lesson.
Yes, we did. We learned so much.
Deals.
I learned from you. I learned from my students.
Never
so thank you.
It's all about the deals. You're the best.
Yeah, all about the deals, baby. Bye.
And it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible because like if you don't have time to watch all 5 seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. A Year of Living Dangerously. And then something like Last Wave, even, that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of the place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make an... They say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else has even... in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air, because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. Easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, it's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it. But at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment. In cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. And yeah, I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things. Again, I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
If you're going to pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.